Hello there, welcome to Cool Climate Living. I'm Susan Lacey. In today's program, I'm going to be talking about something that most of us use every day, and that's olives. We'll learn how to grow olive trees, the varieties that suit our climate the best, how to cook with olive oil, and we'll also hear from someone who has grown her own olive trees with just enough olive oil for her own family and friends, something I'd love to do myself. Now, I'd like to welcome Ed Boshanik to the program. Ed is one of the owners of the Sharrington Olive Grove on the O'Connell Road just out of Bathurst. Ed, thanks for joining the program today.
Good morning, Susan. Thank you.
Now, Ed, tell me, how long have you had the Olive Grove established?
The Grove has been established for 19 years. We planted the trees in the year 2000. We lost a few trees when we first planted them due to bad advice and frosts, but they were all replanted within 6 months. And yeah, so most of the trees are 19 years old now.
And how did you get the idea of planting olive trees?
A moment of madness, I said. I could have done much better using cattle or sheep, but actually the guy next door was planting some olive trees, and I thought, oh, that may not be a bad idea. But since then, his trees have not been looked after where mine have, and I've planted a few more, and so it's going well at the moment.
Did you have to learn much about growing olive trees? Had you had any previous experience?
I had no experience whatsoever, but I joined a group that were called the Central West Olive Growers Association at the time, and I learned quite a bit from them, and also just by reading books and information from magazines, etc. Yeah, it just went on from there.
So is this while you were still working?
I was still working. I thought this would be just a nice bit of a hobby to do on weekends, but I found out that I've bitten off a lot more than I could chew at the time, and I found that I was spending most weekends, the full weekend, just working on the grove. And the pruning, etc., I got way behind in that, but since I've retired, I've managed to catch up on that.
I drive past this property quite often, just coming into the radio station from Oberon, and I envy the way that your olive trees are pruned. They look very neat.
Yes, they're pruned that way mainly for harvesting. Olive trees naturally grow as a shrub, and they have many branches. So you need to train them to have a single trunk for the shaker harvester. Oh. Which, if you've got multiple trunks, well, you can't harvest with a shaker. And that's the main reason they are pruned the way they are for the harvesting purposes.
How did you decide what actual variety of olives to grow?
That was from advice received from Central West Olive Growers Association and a few other different people. They said the four varieties that I have in, they said would be pretty suitable for this climate.
What are they?
I've got Carrigiolo and Frantoio, which are Italian varieties. They originate from Tuscany in Italy. And I've also got Manzanillos, which are a Spanish variety. And the main reason you have the different ones is for cross-pollinations. And I've also got, which is supposedly a uniquely Australian variety called Hardy's Mammoth, which were first planted by Thomas Hardy, the winemaker near Adelaide. And they are very nice big olive, but so far I haven't had a lot of luck with them because they don't bear too well, where the other three varieties that I have bear really well.
So are these olives for making oil, or are they table olives?
Yes, well, the Carrigiolo and Frantoio, just pretty much an oil olive because they're too small to pickle. Where the Manzanillo are dual purpose, you can pickle them or use them for oil. And same with the Hardy's Mammoth, they are quite a large olive and you can pickle them if you wish to.
Now, in this area, you're probably still getting a lot of frost and probably occasional snow. How do the olive trees cope in that kind of environment?
When the trees were small, we lost quite a few to frost. And then I discovered the method of using isolation paper, which is the blue paper they use to insulate houses. I made sleeves out of those and put them over every olive tree, and we didn't have much problem with frost after that. But now that the trees are bigger, they handle the frost no problem at all. The only worry we do have with frost is just before harvest. If we get a lot of bad frost just before harvest time, it ruins the olive. The flesh just goes mushy and the oil is no good. So we have to time our harvest before we get any big frosts.
So they're all well established now, aren't they?
They are, yes.
How many trees have you got?
Got 1,100 trees altogether.
are you?
Yeah, it keeps me out of mischief.
That's a lot of pruning.
It is. It's a bit like painting the Harbour Bridge. Once you get to the other end, you start again.
Yeah.
But I prune pretty much all year round, except when the weather's like very rainy, a lot of moisture in the air. I usually try to prune when the weather's a bit drier. It just prevents any diseases getting into the trees that way.
Can I just take you back to the harvesting? I guess I had some sort of notion that you'd be hand-picking all of these olive trees, and I thought, gee, that'd take a fair while. And I remember seeing old movies of olive trees in Greece and Italy, and they'd lay a great big old sheet underneath a tree and shake it.
Yeah, when the trees were smaller, we did harvest like that. We got rolls of shade cloth, which we rolled out underneath the trees, and then we got friends and relos that came and raked and shaked the trees to knock all the fruit off, and then we'd put it into bins from there.
Mm.
But now that the trees are bigger, that method would just take too long. So we get a mechanical harvester in, comes in, and they have a catcher that wraps around the tree and shakes the tree, and olives fall into the catcher and then go into a bin. This year, we had a great harvest this year, but for some reason, the fruit wasn't just letting go. So I believe we only got about 60% of the fruit off the trees, where in previous harvests, we usually get somewhere around 80 to 90% of the fruit off. Mm. But even so, that we only got 60% of the fruit off, it still was our biggest harvest that we've had.
So you hire in a mechanical harvester, do you?
We do. We hire a mechanical harvester. He comes in, he gets paid by the hour, and it usually takes him 2 to 3 days to harvest all 1,100 trees.
Let's talk about some of the challenges that you have in growing and harvesting. The birds, obviously, always going to be an issue. How do you stop the birds from coming to eat all of your fruit?
Well, we don't really have a problem with birds because the fruit is so bitter that the birds might taste it and then they just leave it alone. But as the olives get riper, the crows come in and they will eat them. But usually by then we've already harvested and the crows are just getting what's left on the trees after the harvest.
What time of year are you harvesting?
Well, we usually try to harvest mid to late May before the big frosts come in. And you need to harvest, they say, when your olives are a third green, a third black, and a third in between. They say that's when you get the best oil. The earlier you harvest, the better oil quality you get, and the later you harvest, you get more oil, but it's not as good a quality oil.
And are the different varieties maturing at different stages?
They do slightly. The manzanillos mature slightly earlier than the Carrigiolo and Frantoio. But it's not a problem, really, because there's not a great difference between their maturity. So we blend the oil all together anyway. It usually turns out to be a really nice oil.
What about, we've had some years of drought, and how does this affect the olive trees?
The olive trees are fairly drought tolerant, even though we do have irrigation system on them. We pump from a bore and irrigate them. But once the trees are up and established, they're very drought tolerant. They're no problem at all. The only thing is, if it's too dry, naturally you won't get as good a crop. They will survive without any water, but if you irrigate them, then you get more olives on the trees naturally.
Was it expensive to set everything up? Because having an irrigation system can be pretty daunting, isn't it?
It was fairly costly. The trees, when we bought them, cost us $5 each, and I think the irrigation probably cost us about the same amount, about $5 per tree when we, by the time you set everything up with all the pipe work and pumps, etc.
Did you buy them locally?
No, they came from Young, a nursery at Young. Originally we bought some from Queensland and we lost quite a few of those to frost. And most of the ones we got in here now we bought from a nursery in Young. And I believe that nursery is no longer there.
All right, now, you've said that you've selected varieties that yield olive oil. What do you do then? So you've harvested everything, you've got your mechanical harvester that's finished its work, and you've got them all stored.
No, well,
what happens next?
Ideally, your olives should be pressed as soon as possible after harvest. So the people that come and harvest for me, they also do the processing. So they transport them back to Billamari, which is about 30 k's out of Cowra, and they do the processing for me, and then they store it for about 2 months to let all the sediment, everything settle, and then we rack it off into containers and bottle it, etc. from there.
And you're selling it from the house?
We sell it from the farm gate, yes. Mm. People can come up and buy oil from us any time they like.
And so what's it like?
The oil, it's very good quality oil. I haven't tasted this year's harvesters yet because we probably won't have those for about another 3 weeks, but hoping to be a really good oil. And it's always a good quality oil. People say to me, oh, when they taste it, wow, that's certainly different to what you can buy in Coles or Woolies. Oh. It's a completely different taste.
And people are frying food with it or just using it on salads? What would you be doing?
Yes, personally, I use it for everything, cooking. All my salads I always drizzle with olive oil. And I think most people use it for just drizzling on salads. It's a bit expensive for normal cooking, but people say you can't cook potato chips in it, but I do all the time. You just have to make sure you don't have it too hot, because olive oil, it does start smoking if you get it too hot.
And olive oil is supposed to be good for you, isn't it?
Absolutely, yes. It's one of the best health foods you could have. People in Tuscany and places like that, they say they live longer than people elsewhere, and they believe it's because of the olive oil. It has tremendous health benefits.
What else is there about the mechanical harvesting that we should know?
Yeah, well, one thing that I didn't mention before is the spacing of the trees. If you intend to use a mechanical harvester, you need to have your trees spaced so he can get in there with his catcher and harvest. The way we've got ours set up is there's 8 metres between the rows, and the trees are set 5 metres apart in the rows, and they reckon that's the ideal setup for mechanical harvesting.
Now, if some of our listeners decide that they would like to start growing an olive tree or a grove of olive trees, what kind of advice would you give them?
Think seriously about it first. Yeah, sure. If anyone wants to establish an olive grove, it does take quite a few years before you get in return on your investment. The Greeks say you grow olives for your children. But look, it's good fun. It's not that difficult once you get set up. I would say anybody that wants to have a go, just go for it. And you also need to have your soil right. The olive trees need a neutral pH of about 7. Most soil around Bathurst is, like ours here, was 4, and we had to put some lime on there to get the pH up. Olive trees are like a pH around 7. Yeah, most of the soil around Bathurst is very acidic.
Now, Ed, have you got any particular style of music or group that you like to listen to?
I do kind of like blues, yeah.
Uh-huh.
Blues. Russell Morris, I love Russell Morris. Anything from his newer albums, yeah.
All right, okay.
Yeah, great, thank you.
We've been listening to Ed Bolshanik. Ed is one of the owners of Sharrickton Olive Grove here on the O'Connell Road. Ed, thank you very much for joining us today, and I wish you well with the continuing harvesting of your olives.
It's been my pleasure. Thank you, Susan.
Early in the morning with the chill still in the air, we sail from Plymouth Harbour, northwesterly blowing bare. The rain was tumbling all around in buckets from the sky, and the wind it stole our breath away, sharp as a razor knife. On a voyage to the end of the world on George's prison ship, 200 lost and hungry souls would feel a lashing whip. A gale it howled all through the rigging on that first black night. It's like the devil himself up there singing this lullaby. I'm going down, 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 Van Diemen's Land. I'm going down, hellbound, Van Diemen's Land. 30 days out of sea and the wind it blew too calm, so they marched us round the quarter deck to the beat of a mournful drum. Thought I'd end up here, some godforsaken hole. I'm going down, down. rocking like a cradle, drifting with my haunted dreams. The dice is on the table. Then the wind, it starts, it's blowing, conjuring up the waves. And I tell myself, when it comes, that fortune favors the brave. Towards Hobart Town, the rumors were about. We heard the Chinese whispers of Port Arthur and its wreck. If I get myself out of here, I ain't never coming back. I'm going down, 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 Van Diemen's Land.
Person to join the program is Victoria Thiers. Victoria lives in Oberon and she has for many years run a ceramic studio, and on top of that she's also a professional chef. Victoria did try and retire as a professional chef, but now she's come back. Victoria, thanks for joining the program today.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Now, we've all heard about many different types of benefits of olive oil and cooking with olive oil on our skin, whatever they might be. What do you think are the benefits of cooking with olive oil?
Well, just before we go on to the cooking, and I love cooking, as you know, but just before we go on to cooking, I had some really, really bad psoriasis a couple of years ago, and I tried medication after medication. Nothing was working, and we tried a locally grown olive oil, cold-pressed, so it was very, very fresh and very, very strong, and I used that on my psoriasis, and within a couple of weeks, I was well on the way for being mending. So that says something, just on putting it on your skin, that says something about the benefits of olive oil. And of course, when you're cooking with it, you're ingesting it. So you're going to get even better benefit. Butter, margarine, as we know, can cloy up your arteries. With olive oil, especially the first pressed virgin olive oil, it sort of flushes them out. Well, I can't really say that because I'm not a doctor or a scientist. That's just my chef's point of view. So, I love olive oil. Any opportunity, I will use it.
Look, it's an ancient remedy for a lot of things. Putting it in our hair, rubbing it on our skin.
Yep.
Hasn't it?
Mm. Absolutely. And what a lot of people don't realise is if you have a recipe that says melted butter, you can substitute the same grammage for olive oil. So, you know, don't think, oh, I can't use it, it says melted butter. Just get your scales out. If it says 75 grams of melted butter or 75 mils of melted butter, weigh it out, and you can substitute it, and you'll get the same end product, but you'll get extra benefits because you're ingesting it.
What kinds of foods are best with olive oil?
Oh, I would just have to say anything, but you can't say that. Certainly fresh salads, you know, a beautiful virgin olive oil over just fresh tomatoes, lettuce, basil and whatever else you want to put in that is gorgeous. But also things like eggplant, which will really suck up the oil. Olive oil is a natural product, whereas other seed products have to be processed in order to extract oil. So when you're dealing with olive oil, it's just a first pressing. It's natural. Nothing gets done to it. It doesn't need to be cooked. It doesn't need to have chemicals added to it. So anything that soaks up oil like eggplant, eggplant parmigiana, or even just a halloumi cheese fried in a little bit of olive oil. Push the lemon over the top of it. Oh, yum. It's my love, of course, as you all know in previous sections, have been cheese. But a second on that would be olive oil. Ricotta rules the world and olive oil tends to support it. How does that sound?
Sounds yummy. What about cooking with meats? Say you're cooking lamb or pork.
Yeah.
I guess I had it in mind that if you're cooking an Asian meal, are you more likely to use a different type of oil, like peanut oil or something?
Absolutely. If you're doing a stir fry, olive oil just simply won't stand up to the high temperatures and it will actually turn and it won't get hot enough. It'll burn and you'll have a nasty flavour. So if you are doing a stir fry, please use something like a peanut oil or a canola oil, something that'll take the temperature. Olive oil won't take high heat. But in saying that, you don't want the high heat in olive oil because by doing that, you're going to destroy all the good things in it. Stir fries use a different oil, but certainly for roasting, for baking, just shallow frying is great in olive oil.
So you can do a roast lamb or a roast beef.
Or a roast pork. Mm-hmm. Or a nut roast, whatever you want to do, it's great. You just can't stir fry with it. That's the only thing, because it won't tolerate the high heat that you need for a stir fry.
Now, you've talked about using olive oil instead of melted butter for some things. Mm-hmm. So let's talk about baking with olive oil.
Right. Well, cakes, are we talking cakes and things like that?
Yeah.
All right. Well, I've got a beautiful recipe for all the listeners out here. And if you know me, you know I love ginger. And this is a gingerbread spice pumpkin bread. Well, it's not really a bread. It's more of a cake loaf. And it's fantastic. And it you can do this in the food processor. I love things like that. Just pop it all in the food processor. Away you go. Make it easy. Put it in a tin in the oven. In the oven for about 45 minutes to an hour, 180. And it's simply 400 grams of peeled and boiled pumpkin, a couple of cups of self-raising flour, a couple of cups of caster sugar, as much ground ginger as you like. Now, I'd go 2 teaspoons, but if it was just for me, I'd go 3 to 4. I love ginger. And a little bit of mixed spice or allspice, if you've got that. A couple of eggs, so 2. If they're tiny eggs, go for 3. We need a little bit of the olive oil, so about a half a cup. Start with half a cup.
It's quite a lot, isn't it?
Not really. Start with half a cup. If the mixture is too thick, then you can add a bit more. And a little bit of milk, so about a third a cup of milk. Now, I like to add some pepita seeds, which are the pumpkin seeds, but I don't do that in the food processor. I sprinkle them on top and also flaked almonds on top. So pop that all in the food processor all at once. There you go.
All right, beautiful. So there's no rubbing?
No, nothing, no. You just put it in the food processor, away you go, into a loaf tin, in the oven for about 45 minutes until a skewer comes out cleanly. Sprinkle your pepitas and your flaked almonds on top and yum. Ice cream, serve it with ice cream or just eat it fresh. Yum.
Yeah, it sounds delicious.
Really nice. And, of course, you're getting the benefits of the olive oil in there as well.
Now, As I introduced you, I said that you've come out of retirement and you're working here in Oberon.
Three days a week up at the golf club here in town.
So what are some of the popular meals that you'd be serving where you're using olive oil?
Oh, look, first I've got to say warm chicken salad. Every week we have a different salad, but one of the most popular ones is a warm chicken salad, and that always has a vinaigrette based on olive oil. And last week we had a Moroccan chicken salad with chickpeas and a beautiful vinaigrette with olive oil and balsamic and lemon juice and pomegranate molasses.
Where do you get pomegranate molasses?
You get it from specialty stores or, if you're lucky, at Harris Farm.
Okay.
They sometimes have it, but you've got to look for it.
Oh,
but
okay.
They sometimes have it.
I suspect these days that some of the biggest supermarkets are a lot smarter at providing these sorts of ingredients that may have been regarded as more exotic.
I try not to shop at the big supermarkets out of respect to the smaller people, so I'll shop locally. But for things like pomegranate molasses, I'll hunt it down. Mm. But I'm sure if you're savvy with the internet, you could easily find it and get it ordered in.
In terms of the olive oil itself, I mean, we're fortunate here in Oberon because we've got a good supplier locally who grows his own olive trees.
Mm.
But for people around, you know, the bigger areas like Bathurst and Orange perhaps, and who are relying on the big supermarkets, the sort of olive oils that you will see on the shelf, what are the varieties that people will see?
Okay, well, Australian olive oils are up there with the best.
Mm.
And the thing that you don't want your listeners to get is the light olive oil. And I have stopped people in the supermarket. I have gone up to them, no, don't put that back. Because the light olive oil is light on everything except the good things in it. The light olive oil is the last pressing, and they've cleaned out the machines, and then they've put a bleach through the machine. So your light olive oil, not only does it not have any health benefits, it has also been bleached. So your light olive oil has got absolutely no health benefits whatsoever, and it's light on flavour and it's light on taste.
So why would people buy it?
Because they look at it and they think, oh, that's light, that's low on fat. Oh,
right. Look
at that, it's low on fat. It's not low on fat, it's not light, it's not like light margarine or light sugar products or whatever. No, it's low on everything, light on flavour and light on benefits. So put it back, don't touch it, get the 100% stuff.
All right, so you've used the terms cold pressed and extra virgin olive oil. What are the other kinds of terms that people will notice and what do they mean?
Well, cold pressing is an old term, really, where they did use the presses and they filtered them down, and, you know, the donkeys or the horses would walk around and around the millstone. And now these days we tend to use little machines called oleomeros, which it's like a centrifuge, and they extract the juice and they extract the oil and then they separate. It's very similar to a cream separator with your milk. So one end of the machine, the waste product will come out, which is all the must and the seeds and all that, and the other side, the oil will come out.
Mm-hmm.
So that's really basically a virgin oil. Towards the end of that, it will become a bit lighter. So then you're just getting olive oil, really. But you certainly, in the olden days, you had your first pressings and then you had your second pressings and your third pressings. And that's where you get the extra virgin, virgin, normal. These days, it's all mechanically done.
Mm.
Well, mostly mechanically done. So if you're buying a good Australian olive oil that says either virgin or first pressed, you're up there. You're going to get a very, very good product. Very good product.
I've noticed sometimes you buy olive oil in a dark glass and sometimes you buy it in a light glass. What's the difference?
It will degrade in sunlight. You must keep it in a dark cupboard or in a dark bottle. And I find an old wine bottle's really good, having drained the contents first. So a dark bottle, so the sunlight doesn't get to it, because if the sunlight gets to it, it will start to taint it, and you don't want that. If you're spending good money for your olive oil, and I would say to anybody, spend as much as you can, because you only need a tiny little bit in order to flavour everything. You don't have to have 3 inches of it to make, you know, do your lamb chops. You just need a little bit. So spend as much as you can on your olive oil and enjoy the taste of it. And don't keep it in the sun, and don't put it in a light coloured container, and certainly don't keep the cap off it, because that way the oxygen's going to get into it and it's going to oxidise, and that is not going to taste good, and it's not going to be healthy on your budget either. Keep it in a dark wine bottle and enjoy the contents of your wine bottle first, and then you can enjoy your olive oil afterwards, you know.
So, no, don't keep your olive oil on the kitchen bench next to...
No, I keep it on my bench because I use it all the time. I keep it in a very dark wine bottle, which I replace frequently. So, yeah, I don't have to wash it. But it's out of sunlight. It's out of direct sunlight. And don't put it next to the stove, because the heat from your stove or the heat from your hot plate is going to help degrade it.
Well, that sounds terrific. Victoria, what is your very favourite thing to eat with olive oil?
Eggplant. It sucks up the olive oil. And if you're using a really good olive oil, it will suck up that olive oil, and I will just cook that, and I will just even have that on toast. Because you get all that flavour, and you get the soft, gooey eggplant. Eggplant have to be my favourite.
Okay, all right, listeners, now you know what to do with all that eggplant that you're going to have growing in your garden this summer. So stock up on the olive oil before you do all of that. Victoria, thank you very much for joining the program today.
Pleasure.
Now, for those of you who didn't have your pen ready at the time that Victoria gave us the recipe for her cake, here it is again. First of all, you start with 400 grams of peeled and boiled pumpkin. Then you have 2 cups of self-raising flour, another 2 cups of caster sugar, some ground ginger, round about 1 to 2 teaspoons, a pinch of mixed spice, 2 or 3 eggs if they're only small, 1/2 cup of olive oil, 1/3 cup of milk, and you put it all in the food processor and mash it up. Put it in the loaf tin, and sprinkle some pumpkin seeds and some flaked almonds for the top, and put it in your oven for 40 to 45 minutes at 180 degrees. And Victoria said to us that she likes to serve it with ice cream. Thank you.
Thank you.
Now, my next guest is Megan Jackson. Now, you all know Megan Jackson because she reads the Talking newspaper every Thursday. But Megan also grows her own olive trees and makes her own olive oil. Megan, what kind of olive trees do you have?
Hi, Susan. We bought a property a few years ago, and so we didn't plant the olives ourselves. We sort of inherited them, if you like, and we are very happy about having olive trees. We have a sort of an olive grove up near the top of the property that has around 40 or so trees in it. They're only about maybe 6 or 8 years old for the most part. No, some of them could be a bit more than that. They could be up to 15 years, some of the older ones that are there. Most of those were planted with oil in mind, and the most common variety that we've got is the Frantoia, which is a good oil-producing olive, meaning it has a higher oil content, graded according to the sort of percentage of oil that they produce.
And how do they cope with the cold climate?
Olives are fine in a cold climate. The main thing that that's absolutely critical to their success is good drainage. Mm-hmm. They must have good drainage, can't stand having wet feet. Now, we're up at Billy Willinga on a high sort of ridgeline, so good drainage is really a given. There's no problems with drainage where we are.
Yep.
Ours don't get any extra water, actually. They're pretty much rainfall only. We haven't sort of got enough water to spare to be watering the olives any extra than Mother Nature provides. But they're fine in the cold. We also have just a small number of older olive trees sort of down the bottom end of our property on a sort of a laneway. And these ones were planted probably about 25 years ago. They were originally purchased, having spoken to the person who put them in, as just a generic fruiting olive from the nursery at the time. And they think that they're probably a variety called Verdale, but not certain on that. They're basically just a generic olive. And we've discovered that they're not so good for oil. They're more of your pickling sort of olive. So we have sort of half a dozen of those, but they're big, more mature trees. And then we have up to 40 in the orchard, younger trees, but they're all producing now.
And how do you maintain the good health of those trees?
Well, ours get a little bit of tough love, I'm afraid, Susan. We don't do a huge amount to them. There's a bit of pruning involved, keeping an eye out for, you know, bugs and beasties and disease. We do have a few problems with black scale around at the moment, but there are sprays and things available for that. Our neighbours are organic, and we actually combine with them in our production of olive oil, so we tend to not use any sprays or things on our trees as much as possible. We'll try and just use natural methods where we can. So at the moment, the olive trees, they don't get a lot of love. They're let's call them easy care.
And you occasionally get unexpected visitors too, don't you?
We do have. There's one famous event that happened a couple of years back now. We got woken in the middle of the night by some very strange loud noises on our roof, and it turned out we had a visitor. It was a very large, healthy male koala who had clambered over the roof and was sitting on the edge of the veranda right next to our bedroom. We admired him by torchlight and then went back to bed. In the morning, he'd found his way down to one of those older olive trees just underneath, just sort of south of our house. And he spent all day sitting in that olive tree, which I have to say, it's only about 3 metres tall, this tree. The koala was sitting in the middle of the tree, very well surrounded by olive branches. We didn't see him eating the olives, but he certainly spent the whole day in the tree. And we sort of did little tour groups for the neighbours' kids to help them come and have a look at the koala in the tree. Didn't seem to worry him. He was gone the next day, so hopefully lives nearby still.
Now, Megan, tell us how you make olive oil.
Well, the process is pretty straightforward. Keep an eye on them, and as they start to turn, usually that's around about sort of May timeframe, although I'm just looking at my notes here. Last year we did pick early in late April, and we basically spend a day picking olives, and there's usually friends and family involved in that because it's a fairly intense process. You've got to get up in the trees and you do a bit of trimming as you go and a bit of pruning as you've picked them and stripped them down. So we collect all the olives in tubs. The secret to getting good olive oil, or one of the secrets, is getting the olives to the presses as quickly as possible. So it's pick one day and get them to the press the next day. So we actually, as I said earlier, we combine with a neighbour. So with our olives. Last year, we managed to pick about 45 kilos off our tree, and they picked about 40 kilos off theirs. So we combined that for 85 kilos total. Mm. We take that to, there's one of a number of small presses that are available, actually around the Mudgee region is where we take ours. I've used a couple of different businesses up there, and most of them have a sort of a minimum kilogram requirement before they can do a pressing. And I think the one we used last year actually has a minimum of 90 kilos. So we were really close to that.
Yes,
so
yes.
So all we do is basically take the olives to them. We take bottles to them as well. The olives are pressed during the day, the oil is extracted, and then it goes back into the bottles that we took up, and then we drive back the same day and we've got the olive oil all ready to go. It needs to sit and just sit for a few weeks to let the residue come down to the bottom of the bottle, and then you can decant it again if you want to, but basically it's ready to go at that stage.
And what colour is it?
The olive oil, it's a beautiful yellowy, greeny, translucent sort of colour. It's a lovely colour. The flavour is quite amazing, and you might not think that, you know, there's much difference between olive oils, but there's a big difference between olive oils. A really fresh, crisp, you know, first press, oil has this wonderful peppery aftertaste. So when you actually taste it, you'll really taste the olives in it. It tastes more like olives than oil, if that makes any sense. Mm. And then there's this sort of finishing of a sort of a peppery finish to it, which tells you that it's really fresh.
Mm.
And then as the year goes by, I guess that freshness, that peppery finish reduces, and you get a sort of a smoother oil towards the end of a year.
And how long does it last?
Yeah, I thought it was sort of leading to that, wasn't it? With the amount of oil that we created, we got last year, it was actually enough oil for both families to last through the year. I'm still using my olive oil. I have not had to purchase olive oil this year at all. I don't know if I'll quite make it through the year. I might have to buy one bottle of oil, but yeah, it's been about enough to last our family for the year.
And why do you do it?
Why do I do it? Well, we've got the olives. You want to use them. I mean, I think it's fantastic that we have this neighbour so we can combine to get enough to actually do something productive with them.
Mm.
If we were on our own and could only get, 40 or 50 kilos, we might not be able to do the pressing.
Mm.
I've also started to learn how to pickle the olives as well, and I've been doing that for the first time last year. So some of the olives that aren't well suited to oil production, you're better off not sending them with the oil production, because the pressers don't like it if you send them poor oil olives, because they get it gummies up the machine too much if they're not designed well for it, and they're not good oil making olives. So the ones that are better for pickling, I'm better off keeping those separate and doing my own pickling process, and they've been very enjoyable this year too. Thank you very much.
And do you use the olive oil for cooking as well as salads?
I do, yes. Mm. And arguably that's a bit of a waste, but look, I think it can't hurt to cook in good quality oil as well as enjoying the oil on salads and drizzled on whatever it is you're making. But I use it for cooking as well.
And do you find it satisfying that you've produced your own?
Oh, it's fantastic. It's so nice. You can make a meal and to be able to use your own produce from the garden and your own olive oil, it's, hey, maybe I'll start growing some wheat and we'll start.
And then you'll be on to bread making.
That's it. And then I'll be able to make the bread to eat with the olive oil.
Yeah, that all sounds great. We've been listening to Megan Jackson, and Megan grows her own olives and makes her own olive oil, which sounds absolutely fantastic. And now let's go to the piece of music that Megan has chosen for us. It's by Judith Durham, and it's called, of all things, The Olive Tree.
Just one branch, I'd search my whole life through. I've heard them say a greener land is waiting there, where people wake and find their dreams come true.
You've been listening to Cool Climate Living. I'm Susan Lacey. Join me again next time. Bye for now.
I really can't stay.
Baby, it's cold outside.
I've got to go away.
Baby, it's cold outside.
This evening has been
hoping that you drop
so very nice.
I'll hold your hands. They're just like ice.
My mother will start to worry.
Beautiful, what's your
My
hurry?
Father will be pacing the floor.
Listen to the fireplace.
So roll. Really, I'd better scurry.
Beautiful, please don't
Well,
hurry.
Maybe just a half a drink more.
Put some records on while I fall.
The neighbors might
but
think.
Baby, it's bad out there.
Say, what's in this
no
drink?
Cabs to be had out there.
I wish I knew how.
Your eyes are like stars
to
right
break
now.
This spell.
I'll take your hat. Your hair looks swell.
I ought to say no, no, no,
Mind
sir.
Mind if I move any closer?
At least I'm gonna say that I tried.
What's the sense of hurting my pride?
I really can't
Oh,
stay.
Baby, don't hold out, baby.
Oh, but it's cold outside.
Baby, it's cold outside.
The welcome has
How
been
lucky that you dropped
so
in.
So nice and warm.
Look out the window at that storm.
My sister will be suspicious.
Gosh, your lips look delicious.
My brother will be there at the door.
Waves upon a tropical shore.
My maiden aunt's mind is vicious.
Gosh, your lips are delicious.
Or maybe just a cigarette more.
Never such a blizzard before.
I've got to get home.
Baby, you freeze out there.
Say, lend me a coat.
It's up to your knees out there.
You've really been
I
grabbed.
I thrill when you touch
but
my hand.
But don't you see?
How can you do this thing to me?
There's bound to be talk tomorrow.
Think of my lifelong
At
sorrow.
Least there will be plenty implied.
If you caught pneumonia and I
really can't
get
stay.
Over that old doubt, baby.
Ah, but it's cold outside.